Welcome to the Woot and Why NFL podcast, proudly brought to you by William Hill, where you'll find faster, easier betting on the NFL.
All things NFL. Now here's your hosts, Woot and Why.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Woot and Why show. My name is Josh Why and I am joined on the line by Josh Woot, hence the Woot and Why show. How are we going, Josh?
That's where we got our name.
It's very factually correct.
That's where we got our name. I don't know how many episodes we are in, but we've discovered that why it was actually named the Woot and Why show and not Bill and Barry's.
Bill and Barry. We've got some new listeners coming in. It's Super Bowl week. A lot of people are amped up for Super Bowl fortnight. A lot of people are amped up for the big game. A lot of newcomers to the sport around this time of the year. So I thought we'd just start the show with some real talk, some facts, and we'll go from there. But obviously, I mentioned Super Bowl 51. I'm a bit worried that we've mentioned Super Bowl a few times now. Apparently, you can get in trouble for saying the word Super Bowl off the NFL, but we'll wait and see whether we're touchable or not. By all means, they can summon us to court in Park Street in New York City. I'd be happy to oblige for a trip to the NFL in New York. I don't know about you.
Yeah, we'll just be like, yeah, we're guilty. Thanks for flying us out.
Yeah. Well, we just want to hear our penalty in person. But as I said, Super Bowl 51 is set. The Atlanta Falcons, they're the home team, taking on the New England Patriots. So some things stay the same and some things change. So we'll wait and see with the results of that in the next couple of weeks.
Josh, why are you excited, wait for it, for the Pro Bowl?
Sorry, what? That's still running?
Yes, that's right.
Do you know, to be honest, I'm actually disappointed that our schedule is very hectic next week, that we're not going to probably be able to do, this week, because we're preparing for the Lunar Bowl, which we'll resell again in a minute. But I'm a bit disappointed we probably won't have time this year to do our anti-Pro Bowl, where we pick the worst players of the teams. I was really excited to see who would win the coin toss to elect Brock Osweiler as their number one overall pick for the anti-Pro Bowl. Probably won't happen this year, unfortunately, but one of our better ideas. But I do not care in the slightest for the Pro Bowl. They can have as many drones and dodgeballs as they want, but until it's out here on our shores, I don't really care.
Yeah, all I've heard about the Pro Bowl is that injured players are out, these players are replacing them, but nothing else. That's all I know.
Alex Smith actually got voted ahead of Andrew Luck. And that just means nothing. It just does not make sense to me. So next week, this is our only show this week, but we'll be coming to you next week as we prepare for the Super Bowl and prepare for Lunar Bowl. We'll have a couple of preview shows, probably one or two preview shows, and then we'll do our infamous prop bets podcast where we talk some of our favorite prop bets and betting angles for the game. You know, part of the fun of the Super Bowl is, your halftime prop bets involving Lady Gaga this year, and then we've also got some no-name singing the anthem, so that'll add some mystery, and then, Gatorade color baths and all sorts of stuff. So we'll have all that sort of fun for you this week. There's no Australian in any Doritos ad this year, which sucks, but look, the matchup on paper, the matchup on paper doesn't look too bad.
No, it's the highest over under line that it's been in
Eons.
Forever.
Yes.
It's ridiculous. That so, I mean, it's got
correct.
It's got all the makings of an absolutely, blockbuster Super Bowl if, it lives up to the hype. It could be, it could end up 33-30. It could be ridiculous. So we'll just have to wait and see. But I think, I mean, Vegas had to put the line at that. They were constantly getting beaten over. The whole playoffs has been like that. It's always gone over or something like that. So, I mean, they had to make the line stupidly high. But, I don't know. I think, I reckon it could go under. Super Bowls are just notoriously tough. So, don't know.
We'll wait and see. Plenty of X's and O's to read through, and over and unders and lines and spreads to get through. But before we get to breaking down all of that, how was your holiday break down in Huskisson, in the lovely South Coast? I saw a few little happy snaps, a little cheeky, you know, pickception from you taking a photo of a picture store or a photo store. Can't remember what it was.
Oh yeah, that was a really really old school cinema. That was really really crazy. So that was.
Is it still a cinema, yeah, or is it just like revamped inside?
No, it's still really old school cinema. All the seats are on the same level. There's no incline whatsoever. And like even in front of the screen is like a little stage where like back in the day there would have been like little performances and stuff held there. I'm pretty sure they also used like the theater as, you know, for other uses. But I mean, it's obviously chief use is movie cinema. But yeah, so
did you watch
cool
anything?
Yeah, I saw the Founder. You know, the McDonald's one.
No, I have not. Any good?
Yeah, not bad.
I watched Manchester by the Sea yesterday. Not bad.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, shout out to the Huskisson Pictures, the little cinema there. It was cute. Plus, all by right. the way, a normal ticket, $10. Amazing. Oh. Amazing. That's unheard of here.
You just don't get that anymore.
Mate, that's cheaper than the cheap Tuesday deal you get.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. So there we go. Local area man labels small time cinema cute. Let's move on to our championship recaps. And should we pay homage to Chris Berman with a little bit of a whoop whoop? Nope. Nah, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing a comprehensive breakdown like that. It would be a lot easier because these games were blowouts, and that was pretty much the trend for all the playoff games so far, except for one. So let's just hope that the Super Bowl is close, like you said at the top of the show. But let's start with the NFC. That was the first game. And for the first time since 1998, the Falcons are going to the Super Bowl. A dominant 44-21 beatdown of the Green Bay Packers at the Georgia Dome. What a way to send off the Georgia Dome. And Matt Ryan and co, they left no question which team was the best. It was just a, as we said, comprehensive and dominant from start to finish from the Atlanta Falcons. And this Falcons offense, and that's the main takeaway from this game as we head into the Super Bowl, just so dominant from top to bottom. Everywhere you look from this team, it's just unbelievable. It didn't matter what third down it was 3rd and 4, 3rd and 24, 3rd and 15. They just seemed to convert from anywhere.
Both games were so lopsided. The whole Atlanta and the Patriots, they were just both, you know, completely dominant on offense, and the defenses were putrid. They were so bad. It was the worst thing to happen, really. Like, these games had so much potential. Like, at the start of the season, I mean, scrap that, because I thought Atlanta was going to be, you know, picking very high in the draft, so that's really, really bad.
Well, to be honest, though, Josh, you're not the only one. You know, a lot of experts and, well, you know, quote-unquote experts and analysts, you know, said that they thought Atlanta were more likely to be picking in the top 10 than making the Super Bowl. So you weren't the only one to die on that hill, and there's nothing to be ashamed of there.
No, but, and a lot of people didn't expect Kyle Shanahan's offense to, like, you know, bounce back and be so successful as it is. But the whole offense is firing on all cylinders. It's just, you know, it's exploding. It looks great. Atlanta's defense is still a little bit, there's still some question marks there, but the offense can carry it. It's so weird that we've been saying that, like, in the last 5 years, defense wins the Super Bowl. Defense wins the championship. But this year, it just looks like whoever's offense, as stupid as it sounds, whoever scores more is just going to win the Super Bowl. It's just whoever can, you know, just put up the most points. Saying that, Patriots defense is going to be way better than what Green Bay is, and the Falcons is still going to be better than what the Steelers had. They've got a far better pass rush than whatever the Steelers were generating. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, and we'll get to that game as well and that game plan. But you're right, the defense in a lot of these games has not been great, and that's why we've got this lopsided result. But this this, you know, not to take away from the Atlanta offense, they did this against the Denvers and the Seattles of the world. So it's not just that they played a putrid defense, but, you know, it's just been an unbelievable run for Matt Ryan these last six games. 18-0 touchdown interception ratio, 133 passer rating, and they averaged 39 points a game. And his completion percentage is nearly 73%. It's just, it is pretty crazy now. And he's now got the most consecutive playoff games with 3-plus touchdowns, which pretty much eliminates all the narrative surrounding his playoff failures, as I put it in air quotes here, that no one can see, so I don't know why I'm doing it. But it was just dominant. And we've seen it every game now. 8 straight games, they've had an opening score drive for a touchdown. And Kyle Shanahan is just proving to be a wizard. And this game, pretty much, you could just add another couple of digits to his paycheck in San Fran.
If Kyle Shanahan goes to San Fran and, you know, just takes over the offensive play calling and then hires, you know, a sound defensive coordinator, they're set. I think they've got
they can't snow him under with too much workload that'll take him away from what he does best.
Exactly. They've got a good, solid foundation if they can put him as the offensive play caller and just have... I mean, they've gone out and tried to get Vic Fangio back, and he's not going. But I think that could have been good.
Mm.
That could have been a nice little duo there, but I don't know. We'll wait and see. They might find some other gem out there.
Yeah. Can we have a minute silence for Ladarius Gunner? It's just...
No.
He's on the list with Bene Benique, the other cornerback that was, you know, destroyed by Julio Jones this year.
Julio destroys everyone. But how easy is it to just throw a screen to a guy that is that big and that fast? You don't even need to throw it far. You just he's a beast.
Yeah, and there's a GIF, and we retweeted it where he runs about 3 yards. Fakes left and then fakes right, and Ladarius Gunter ends up 2 zip codes away in the middle of the field, and Julio Jones is just wide open. He is just unbelievable. I think he's pretty much cemented himself now as the best wide receiver in the NFL, and it's going to be a crucial matchup, you know, against the Pats. But, you know, as we said, we'll preview this game because it's just far too early.
Well,
at this point,
we were saying the same exact thing about Antonio Brown last season. The guy just runs the perfect route. The guy runs blistering speed, and he doesn't drop anything. He just catches everything. And now it's one season later, and we're doubting him. And the Steelers organization are questioning whether or not he's concerned too much about his own personal statistics than the team's performance as a whole. Mm. So,
I find that bizarre. We will get to that in a minute. But the difference between Julio and Antonio Brown last year was not much. Like, we're talking apples and oranges here when we move one ahead of the other. They're essentially in the same tier. But moving on to the other side of the ball, Green Bay, I didn't think Aaron Rodgers was that bad. I just felt like his entire team just imploded around him, and just some crucial errors just cost them some points early on. And when you get behind a couple of touchdowns or double digits against this Falcons team, you're going to play catch-up football, and when your defense is not making any stops, it's just impossible. You're just getting snowed under, or, you know, building yourself a huge hole. And, you know, Aaron Ripkowski fumbles the ball at the 11 and then results in, you know, a no points, and then missed field goal from Crosby. It was his first miss in 23 straight field goals. So, you know, instead of 10-0, it ended up, you know, being like 17-0, and that was pretty much it.
Yeah, I know I'm pretty much just looping both Atlanta and New England into the same thing. These are two teams that you just, if you get to the red zone, you need to make sure those threes are sevens or those zeros are sevens. You
couldn't agree more.
You can't miss. I mean, the field goal, it seems like it's an anomaly. It's an anomaly because Crosby just doesn't miss. But at the end of the day, I mean, I know the fumble happened as well. But see, like, those are things that it shouldn't come down to that. It should just be a touchdown. We're just talking about, like, Rodgers and a Rodgers-led team that's on 7 straight wins or whatever they were on. And then just completely capitulated. So it was so weird, but at the end of the day, both these, you know, what we think are, you know, high-octane offenses with Pittsburgh and Green Bay just completely got, you know, stifled, only scored field goals. And, I mean, it just didn't...
Just didn't execute.
Wasn't enough.
Yeah.
Because the other team just converted it and made a touchdown. So it was, you know, it was the 17-0 or whatever, and it was just ridiculous. By the way, can I please say, I was away, and I gave my predictions to you,
yep.
And you said, you asked my predictions, and I said that Atlanta would F Green Bay up, and then Green Bay would come back but not be enough. I reckon I nailed it.
You did nail it. You did very, very well. And I don't know if you listened to the show with RJ, but I predicted a Ricardo Allen interception. That happened. And I also predicted that Chris Boswell would miss a kick in Green Bay in New England, and that happened as well. So across the board, we just nailed it. So we did
Except
pretty well.
Never take our own advice and put money on it.
No, although I did put money on Chris Boswell to miss a kick. So I am
you
happy.
Did?
Yeah, it was paid $4. Kickers always miss in New England in the playoffs. It happens all the time. The stats actually back it up. They've been helped. No team's been helped more by missed field goals than New England. Not that they need it, but it's just funny how things always work. You know, that mantra of make your own luck is kind of funny at times, but, you know, the numbers back it up. Football Outsiders, Scott Kazmaier done a great job. He backtracked the last decade of missed kicks, and it is quite uncanny how that kind of works. Like, fumble luck and field goal luck, but that's just ball security and execution. But the missed field goals on the other side are a little bit crazy. But I mentioned this, like this Green Bay offense, the fumble. Did you think it was a safety?
What was this? Sorry, in the Green Bay game?
Yeah, when he Ripkowski fumbled it and Collins recovered it sort of like right on the goal line. People thought it was a safety. Look, I know people want to say that it was a safety, but even if that is deemed a safety, I find that rule utterly ridiculous, because then your team is benefiting from a fumble. It's not like he went back into the end zone and then tried to run back in and then got pushed back into the... Like, I feel like that was the right call. Maybe it should have just been down at the one rather than a touchback, but I don't think in any way, shape or form that should be ruled a safety.
No, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's kind of similar to when a player, if they fumble it...
Reaching for the goal line, yeah.
Yeah, it's so dumb.
Yep.
It's just another rule that, whatever.
Yep.
Whatever.
Another takeaway from a couple of takeaways from this game before we talk about what's next for Green Bay. Obviously, you've got to look at the loser as the winner will analyze over the next few weeks. Jordy Nelson is a really tough bastard. That was unbelievable what he was able to put on display. And Aaron Rodgers got very emotional after the game talking about Jordy Nelson's toughness. So he's obviously... You know, maybe we're underestimating how big of a comeback it actually was, because if Aaron Rodgers is tearing up about it, then you know that it must have been a hell of an effort for Jordy to go out and play and give his all. He actually had a pretty good game.
Yeah, no, a decent game for, you know, everything he's gone through in the last, say, 12 to 18 months as well. It's insane. But to be honest, like, he's at that point now where you can tell that he's obviously hindered from still his, you know, last season's injury, and he's getting on in age, and he's hopefully he can kind of do what Fitzgerald's done. And I mean, Fitzgerald's just a complete freak, and he just, you know, he just had the elixir of life, and the guy just will just play forever.
It's weird.
I know, it's crazy. You see photos of him, he looks exactly the same.
We'll add this to the off-season. We need to do a rankings of just players that have aged phenomenally well, like a power rankings.
That's fine. We'll probably have minimal to talk about in some of these months, so that's fine. But I think it's going to be interesting to see what they do with Jordy, because I think they're going to have to move him inside, and they're going to have to, you know... I mean, Randall Cobb's, you know, dropped off significantly. They've got Devontae Adams. They've found a gem in Ty Montgomery, but they still need help elsewhere. The injuries showed, you know, their weaknesses this season. And I mean, it's a shame, because if they had a full complement of weapons and Jordy was healthy, it might have been slightly different. I know Atlanta's playing out of their skin, but, you know, this is a... Look what they were able to do with a completely depleted team. Imagine what they could have done with a like a fully healthy squad. So.
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny you say that. You know, a lot of people are saying they need to rebuild, but Aaron Rodgers says, no, we need to reload. And I think that's exactly what you just said right there, is that, you know, they're still a very flawed team, but Rodgers covered up a lot of it. But you're right, there are pieces there. They just need to just reload a little bit. If they can move Jordy inside and get an outside presence in the draft, or sign someone, there's a lot of, you know, wide receivers that are going to be available. But they're not a team that often signs free agents. But we'll wait and see how they go. Obviously, in the draft, they need to defend, you know, address this defense. And Dom Capers, I don't know how he keeps having a job. That they've leaked points in the playoffs like there's no tomorrow. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, it's just one of the mysteries of the NFL season, that is 2016-2017 season. It's just it's a bizarre world that we live in.
Crazy. And playoffs, obviously the word legacy comes up a lot. I don't think that game changes Aaron Rodgers' legacy at all. There's been some very hot takes over the last couple of weeks, last couple of days. Colin Cowherd today is saying that Matt Stafford is better than Aaron Rodgers, which is just a load of crap.
I'm sure we can go back when and find some line from Cowherd saying that Rodgers is the best quarterback to have ever played the game.
Yeah,
so
I mean, like, that, just because his defense couldn't make a stop, his running back fumbles, that it's a fullback because their running back gets injured and they had to abandon the run. Jared Cook drops, there was five drops, missed field goals. Yeah, Aaron Rodgers stinks. Like, please.
All right, saying this, right? I know everyone's brandishing that stupid stat of 0-35 against winning teams or comeback, whatever it is.
Stupid.
But saying that, it's a very interesting statistic. It is interesting.
It is, but what about how many times he's been up? You know, 7 to 10 points against.
I know that, but if it's one of those things that you're like, if they're down, and you just think, oh, we've got a real chance here. We've got Aaron Rodgers. You look at that stat and think, well, it doesn't mean crap. it is interesting. I mean,
but he did it last week against the Cowboys. Like he came back and put them in the lead, put them in the game. We've seen it many times.
I know.
It is weird. I get it. And you know, I tweeted during the game that he was hitting the Peyton Manning bingo board of playoffs, because often it just reminded me of watching Colts games. Running back fumbles, defensive lapses, missed field goals. I'm thinking he is just having a Peyton Manning playoff game for the ages, where every single teammate just doesn't do their job and just lets you down. And it was just tough to watch. I felt Rodgers' pain, but I don't think that game changes anyone's opinion on him. When he's at his peak, he's probably the best quarterback we've ever watched, because he just, when it all connects at once, he's unbelievable.
Ever watched his high praise.
Sorry, well, you know, but when he does just put it all together, there's nothing beautiful than an Aaron Rodgers deep pass.
See, this is the thing, right? I mean, we're getting kind of off topic, but I think that Rodgers is one of those players that he has those games where he makes every throw and you just think, God damn. But same, like, against Atlanta, he didn't play as if you think he's a bad quarterback, but he still had a poor game. The whole team had a poor game.
Yep.
There's no one can hide.
No.
So
exactly. All right. Well, let's see what they can do and readdress. You know, having Aaron Rodgers on your team just gives you a chance every single year, but obviously the same problems. It's very much like the Colts.
If you draft him tomorrow, you're still drafting him.
Oh, like, absolutely. Well. Yeah, without a doubt.
All time ago.
Yeah. All right. let's move on to the AFC side of things. And the New England Patriots will become the first organization to play 9 Super Bowls after Sunday's convincing 36-17 victory over the Steelers in the AFC Championship game. As we said, the offense was on fire, but the Patriots are a well-oiled machine from top to bottom. You know, their roster isn't the best in the Bill Belichick era, but it is a complete one. You know, he gets the job done. He gets...
Josh?
Yes?
I want to ask the listeners for something.
All right.
You are very, 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 very salty when it comes to this team and the players and everyone. When it just comes to this team, it's just, what salt can we find? You're opening up every pantry cupboard, looking on every shelf for more salt. Can someone please put a photo of Josh White on that salt gif? The guy sprinkling the salt off his elbow. I need that. I need Josh's face with that. You can add any Patriots logo you want in it, whatever.
It's not
but
the,
I need that.
It's not the team. It's just like 80% of the fans here are just annoying. It's just...
No way. No way. Sometimes people weren't even saying anything, and it was just complete you on Twitter.
It's fine.
You know it is.
It's fine. It's just constant. Like, we have to... I don't need to be told every 5 minutes from some nobody that someone's the GOAT. I don't care. Just... I want
to
talk about...
You need to learn to ignore.
Oh, yeah, I know. I know, but it's just constant. And
because the worst thing about all these people...
Is ESPN making us admins of that group, by the way.
The people saying... you know, the people that come back and fight those people that say, you know, Tom Brady's the GOAT are exactly the same. They're exactly the same. They're no better. So all the people that say Tom Brady is, you know, the GOAT 40 times a day and their only argument is that he is the GOAT, whether or not that opinion is shared by everyone or just you, saying it a million times and then having someone come back a million times with the same response just doesn't get anyone anywhere, and they're both as bad as each other.
Very true. All right, let's talk about this entire game because it was a comprehensive victory as you'll ever see. And the Steelers just have no answer for the Patriots. It was very... It reminded me... I keep bringing up the Colts, but it reminded me of... When we play the Patriots, they pretty much Pagano'd it, the Steelers. They have not learnt at all from their prior beatdowns. They failed to change any of their scheme or game plan. So every time the Colts played New England in the playoffs, LeGarrette Blount or Jonas Gray or whatever just ran for 400 yards against us, but Pagano didn't change anything. Every time the Steelers in the zone defense plays Tom Brady, they get carved up like a surgeon with a knife, but they didn't change a thing.
How demoralizing must that loss have been for Ben Roethlisberger to be contemplating retirement?
Yeah, let's talk about that quickly. Do you actually believe him?
Hell yes.
Really? I don't believe him for a second.
Contemplating retirement?
No way.
Definitely.
No way.
You don't think he's contemplating it whatsoever? No. Why would someone come out at his age and his...
Because he wants to take attention away from the loss, and he wants people to say, no, we want you back. He's an attention seeker. He's a quarterback. The spotlight's not on him anymore. I know he's this big band and he's this big, tough, brooding guy, but he wants a little bit of love and a little bit of caring, and he wants people to yearn for him. There's no way he's not coming back. He's getting Martavis Bryant back next year. They've got a stellar offense.
This is the guy that just lost essentially his idol, considering he has a signed Tom Brady jersey in his office.
Yeah, well, that's fine, but I just don't believe him for a second. He's Brett Favre-ing all of us right now. We put up with this for like 10 years with Brett Favre. There's no way he's retiring.
Brett Favre is, you know, just a washed-up jeans salesman.
I don't believe Big Ben is retiring for a second. But
not that I want him to retire, but God, it'd be great for him to retire and just, you'd be like, damn.
Just because I'd be so wrong, you just keep replaying.
I'm sick of Le'Veon Bell and Martavis Bryant's crap. I'm just...
But look, think about it, though.
Every year, something like, we're so excited about this explosive offense that they have, and this offense can carry this defense, then Bryant deals with that. Then you've got
Le'Veon Bell getting injured.
Dealing, you know, saying he's Steph Curry. And then you've got Ladarius Green, who's, you know, been struggling all season with, you know, things that are actually serious.
Yeah.
Things that are out of his control, but...
Still.
Oh, my God.
It is annoying. It's yet another loss for the playoffs where Le'Veon Bell, you know, pretty much didn't play in, let's be honest. Like, he played, what, like three snaps? And that affected their entire game plan, but it looked like Bill Belichick went into that game with his mind set on stopping Antonio Brown rather than Le'Veon Bell.
Le'Veon Bell was poor before he went out.
He only had about four or five carries, but I do agree. And
he had six carries for 20 yards.
Well, when you look at what D'Angelo Williams did when he came back in, that's a stark difference. It was not ideal. I think D'Angelo Williams averaged about 1.2 yards per carry after that. So obviously that game plan took a huge shot, and it was tough because the Steelers made a conscientious effort to make Le'Veon Bell their this center of their offense for the last 8 weeks, and a part of that was because Big Ben's not playing the best, and it just went to crap after that.
Well, this is what I think happened, right? That obviously, you don't go into a game with essentially backup plans. Hey, what happens if Bell gets injured? You just don't prepare like that. You've got so many aspects of the game to prepare for. You don't prepare for what's going to happen if one of our best players goes out. Like, that's just not how you prepare for the game. You assume you have all your weapons, and that's how you're going to beat the other team, using your best players, obviously.
Yep.
So then Bell goes out, and they didn't have a ground game essentially when he was in there. And I mean, I know he adds a completely different dimension with his pass catching ability, but D'Angelo Williams went in there. Patriots didn't, like, their game plan wasn't really, hey, we know how to deal with D'Angelo Williams. He came in, was successful. He was the one that scored their first touchdown. And then after that, then it was like the Patriots just caught on. Hey, we know when D'Angelo's now going to run. We know when Big Ben's going to throw it. And then that's just how it became. That's just how the game went. They knew that Big Ben was going to have to throw it. They didn't need to.
Yep.
It's like it was just obvious when D'Angelo was going to run it. But also those stats are kind of skewed because, I mean, of the whole James Jones stop the line thing. So then he just had that just constantly getting blocked on the line. Of course it's going to affect your stats. So.
Yeah. It felt like this game was over before it even began. Like, the great quote from Greg Rosenthal's write-up, he said, there's no advantage greater than being more prepared than your opponent. And I felt like Bill Belichick knew what he was doing the minute, I felt like the minute this game plan was put together on Wednesday that the Patriots were going to win. You know, he's the biggest...
I want to know something, right? It's quite clear that McDaniels calls all the plays on offense, right?
Absolutely.
He's the guy that's him, right? And, I mean, him and Tom probably just design the playbook, and then the view from the sideline obviously helps, and, I mean, it's just a perfect collaboration that they've got on offense. Then you've got, help me out with the defensive coordinator
Matt
right
Patricia.
Now.
Patricia.
That's it. He's calling plays on defense. You can tell it. He's just completely doing that. And I know the game plan and everything comes down to Belichick, but what is he doing on the sideline?
Man,
I really want to know this. I'm not saying he's not doing anything. The guy's a legend and he's a complete freak. But I know he's just always arguing and he's pointing and he's throwing the red flag when he has to. But I want to know what he's actually doing.
I think he does more on defense than we actually give him credit for. And I think he has a bigger say in the offense during the week than what we think. The man doesn't sleep. The guy just lives and breathes football.
I completely agree. Like, I know he obviously he has an input. It's just can't see it and we can't hear what he's saying. So it's just that's really interesting. I think he definitely has things to do with say there's a certain defensive scheme that he thinks is going to start working. He'll say, "Hey, Patricia, let's go in this direction."
Yeah, I think he guides both
and
the coordinators.
Then Patricia will start calling the play.
Yeah, I think he guides both the coordinators. I feel like we'll know a lot more when he retires. Like, he doesn't say a lot in interviews and things on him, but I feel like once he retires and he's completely out of the NFL.
Oh, you mean his full-page autobiography?
but I feel like NFL films, like, he'll actually do a sit-down and just explain so much, and it'll be such captivating stuff. It'll be just phenomenal. Like, it would just, like, there'd be, you could just pick, like, 25 or 30 games where he's just, exhibited a perfect game plan. Like, in this one, like, he knew their zone defense better than the Steelers players did. Like, they came out, were extremely fast. They converted 9 out of 12 third downs early on, and they just killed them. And that was, and it was perfect execution by McDaniels and Brady, but that's come from Bill Belichick's preparation. It was just every level of the Pats was just amazing on Sunday. It was just everything. The whole team did everything.
I just don't know. See, like, I don't know how much Belichick has to do with the offense, to be honest. Like, every time Tom comes off the field, it's him talking to McDaniels. I swear the whole offense just runs through them two.
I don't know. I feel like
I know that Bill has certain, like, he'd definitely have inputs and be like, hey, yeah, we need to go far more run heavy. We need to do this, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. He's a great, like, the strategy side of things.
It's for Colts. Let's just run it down their throat. Like, I mean, you don't need to be Belichick to know that.
But no, yeah.
That whole thing is just like, I reckon it's kind of just like a generic thing, and he would sit with them, but I really think he definitely has more input on defense than offense. I think it's far more McDaniels and Tom for offense.
He's a great strategist, but you got to also, you know, the other side of things is he's just his ability to build a team, you know, and as I said, it's probably not their best 53 players that they've ever had on their roster, but it's the right 53. You know, he turned Chris Hogan into a stud. He trades Jamie Collins and Chandler Jones, makes it work with Kyle Van Noy, Chris Long, and Eric Rowe. It just turns these rejects into players.
No one but Chris Hogan turns Chris Hogan into a stud. All right?
How happy were you to see your boy kill it?
As soon as he was traded, I said, it is perfect for them. Like, he's a bigger Edelman.
We should go back to our free agency episode, and I swear you said he might not have a huge season, but he'll have a good game in January and win them a game. I swear we said that.
The guy, like, all right, he's got good acceleration. He's not fast, but he's a good route runner, and that's all you need.
He leads the league in yards per catch. Unbelievable.
It's great. I mean, it's always, you know, he's exactly where he needs to be. The ball's always where it needs to be for him. And it's just always beautiful.
Yep. Just some other points on this game. The Patriots' defense, you know, a lot of talk about their offense. But the defense, you know, they came up with game-altering plays. They held the Steelers to 9 points for the first 50 minutes of this game. They forced turnovers. They were stout against the run, even though they lost Le'Veon Bell. They still contained D'Angelo Williams, as you said earlier, and their offensive line, they just held up extremely well. All the talk was about the Steelers' offensive line playing really well, but, you know, Brady was pressured 4 times in this entire game, and if you look at his numbers with and without pressure, that's the key for the Falcons when you look to it. So without pressure, he was 30 of 38, 377 yards, 9.9 yards per attempt and 3 touchdowns. With a little bit of pressure, 2 for 4, 7 yards, 1.8 yards per attempt and 2 sacks. So if you can get pressure on, you know, 39-year-old Tom Brady, that's the only thing that can slow this guy down at this point in this offense, because him and McDaniels, as you said, they're just in sync. And every time Brady threw, their wide receiver was just wide open. I don't think he needed to make a tough throw in that game. It looked way too easy for him. He just stood there and was like, it kind of felt like he was just toying with them.
You know what, though, right? I know we say, you know, pressured 4 times kind of thing. You know when you're watching it and it seems like their offensive line collapses so quickly on the edges, except then the defensive ends are pushed straight past him and he steps up?
Yeah.
He's 39 years old and the guy looks like he takes 3 steps with 1 step. Like, it's that fast. And it's just like, it's so weird to see. Like, a 39-year-old guy who can't run. Like, the guy is just ridiculously slow.
I was going to say, just bringing back the old offensive line coach really helped, because that just makes the pocket so easy. But obviously, as you said, his ability to navigate at 39 is crazy.
It's just him pointing, just going, you run there, while he's stepping up. It was just bizarre. I mean, and there was a bit where he threw it away, and it was obviously deliberate. But it was that kind of thing that I feel that young quarterbacks still struggle with. It's just like, no, I've got to make something out of this play. Like, just get rid of it if there's that pressure. Yeah. Like, it's just, I don't know, it's a good thing. And Matt Ryan's done it this year too. He's just thrown it away when you need to.
Are you coming around on Matt Ryan? He's been good, man.
I haven't said that
He's the MVP. He's the MVP though, right?
He has to. You know what though? I think he's played out of his skin. But it's like, it gets to a point when, you know, when, I don't know, it's just the favorite, the favorite gets the media attention, no matter what happens. Mm. Same as, like, The Revenant, it was nowhere near the DiCaprio's best movie, but everyone wanted him to win it.
Yeah.
It was a good enough movie, so everyone just kept saying The Revenant, and then it won.
It's a great analogy. So, you should get a job with The Ringer with that one.
There you go.
last little note. I've talked about Belichick. We talked about Brady and McDaniels. Antonio Brown didn't have a play over 20 yards. Again, just proving that, Belichick takes away your opponent's best weapon. So we'll see what he can conjure up for a Julio Jones special in the Super Bowl.
Can I mention my favorite play? My favorite play, and I know a lot of other people enjoyed it as well, but there was an audible when Brady said, "Jordan, Jordan, Jordan!" And then, people split out everywhere, and then it was a beautifully thrown seam through the zone straight to Chris Hogan.
Yeah.
I loved it. It was my favorite.
Teams have got to stop playing zone against this. You just can't keep giving Edelman and Hogan like 5 yard cushions. Like, you can't do that. It just doesn't work. So dumb.
Look at this. Look at this, right? Everyone was complaining that, Le'Veon's out and it could have been different. But I mean, this is still like a team that is essentially built around everyone being drawn to Gronk and then these two quick guys feeding on the scraps essentially.
Yeah.
So it's a complete. It's weird. The whole offense. Obviously, everyone's thinking this offense was killing it when Gronk was in, but now that Gronk's gone, we expected Bennett to kind of step in and fill that role. But he's kind of just stayed in as a blocker. I think he only had three or four receptions.
Yeah, he still takes a little bit of attention away, but not as much as Gronk. You're right. It is.
Of course.
They did struggle last week against Houston, but that's the best defense they'll face for a while because obviously Atlanta's not that good enough, but. Even though the Steelers were sloppy and they lost Le'Veon Bell, and look, they did get robbed of a bad fumble call. Brady fumbled that ball, and they did recover it. I know the footage was tough to see, but I really thought they were hard done by on that call, and they didn't. The Pats didn't.
That was one of those calls where it was just like it won't be overturned. It was like whatever the decision on the field was,
yeah.
It was going to go that way.
Yeah.
I still think they were rough.
It was rough.
You know what, though? That's the thing. That's the thing, right? So say Tom Brady, we don't know what happened in that pile, but say Tom Brady fumbles it, right? You could clearly see it came out, right? But what happens if he fumbles it and then regains it, and while he's on the ground, this ridiculously big lineman pulls it out while he's under the pile? Does it then become the linebacker?
Exactly. Yeah, you see that. I bet you so many fumbles have been resulted that way when it's been just a bigger, stronger defensive lineman ripping it out of a small, nimble quarterback's hands. But
Definitely. That's kind of that situation. Like, I have no doubt that, he did drop it or he did bobble it on that thing, in that play. But at the end of the day, it was just like, it was such a crazy call. I mean, and you felt like if you're the coach, you need to make the challenge because you can see it come out, but then it's not going to be overturned. But then if you don't challenge it, all your fans kill you. So
Tomlin was damned if he did and damned if he don't. Yeah, you're right. But I do feel like they're hard done by on that, and the Pats got a touchdown from that and just put the game out of reach. And then there was also a couple of defensive pass interference calls, at least three or four of them that they probably should have got as well. And then
I reckon they were on both sides. I reckon there was a couple on both sides early that were let go, and then there were so many being let go by both teams. I thought the refs were actually kind of doing a really good job of letting them all go. It was kind of like, well, if we've been letting them go for so long, that's fine. And then as soon as that hit came in on Edelman's helmet, which essentially, Shazier, I think, the one that did it, he couldn't do anything about it, but it was a penalty.
It was, but they just whiffed on a few others that would have liked to have seen it because it would have made the game a little bit more entertaining. There was no doubt the Pats were going to win the game, but it at least would have made things a little bit more interesting and at least resulted in a closer game. But, Mike Tomlin didn't help either. He punted on inside. He punted from the New England 40, for God's sakes. What are you doing?
Tomlin's one of those. Tomlin is a motivator, and he can instill this kind of vigor and anger and, in that emotion into your team, and you can go out there and have one of those games where defense is killing everyone, offense is firing, and everyone's pumped up and everyone's just, shaking their fist at everyone, super excited. But then when it gets into one of those positions, like against Patriots, it was just nothing. He was just like damn it. I thought I was going to have Bell. I could have done a few screens, but, like, whatever. Saying that, the missed kick by Boswell, the fumble by Brady, all of this was still irrelevant because the Pats were killing it.
Exactly. They would have won anyway, but I just thought it would have made things a little bit more interesting, a little bit more fun. But, you know, Tomlin punting from the 40 is just, you know, I feel like other coaches just the bed because they're playing against Belichick. They get scared about facing him and they just do stuff that they probably shouldn't do. I don't understand it, but you know, they probably would have.
That's happening.
Yeah,
that kind of thing is happening, and then you've got a 39-year-old quarterback doing flea flickers.
Yeah, unbelievable. But I feel like the Steelers probably would have won this game if they didn't have to get woken up by an alarm at like 3:40 in the morning. That just changed the whole game, didn't it? I'm totally joking. I feel like everyone's ignoring. Yeah. It was a good ploy by Belichick to ring the alarm, because what it did was, is it took the attention away from him actually, giving the Steelers 15 Steelers players the flu. He's gone into their locker room, infected 15 of their players with the flu, and thought, I'll distract all of that attention away by putting the alarm. It's just genius chemical warfare from Bill Belichick.
Man, it's amazing.
Unbelievable. How's that for a conspiracy?
Didn't that happen to Seattle last year?
It's happened to so many teams. Chris Harris Jr. tweeted it. David Brunton from the Redskins tweeted it. Alan Feneca from the Steelers, former Steelers player, said he's never played in a game in New England where it did not happen. He says it happens every single time they've been up there. Boston fans are nuts.
You know what, though? It's kind of crazy. It's kind of cool. Like, I mean, people can hate Boston fans, and they're just seen as a lunatic bunch of sports nuts.
Yep.
But man, I don't know. But that's like, to me, if that was happening, if that happened in Australia and say it was, I don't know, all the Newcastle teams, I'd just be like, man, good on you, all right? You just coming to our territory.
It is funny, but it's like you've got the greatest coach and quarterback combo ever, and you don't really need to be doing this. Like, your team's going to win most of their games anyway, but it is kind of a little bit funny, but I don't want to be woken up at 3:40 in the morning. But anyway, it created a little bit of controversy and a whole lot of hot takes and things like that, so it always makes Twitter fun. All right, before we let you go, because I know you got to head off, happy Australia Day, by the way. We've ticked over into Australia Day. What type of meat pie man are you? You just plain, or you like a bit of steak, mushroom? What do we got?
Well, we mentioned lasagna pie. Oh, that is quite clearly amazing. Actually, you know what? I might go celebrate Australia Day tomorrow. If that little cafe that I know is open, I will go have a lasagna pie.
Can you pick me up one?
no worries. I'm a traditional man. I like that. It's weird. While I was away, I had a steak and cheese and bacon. I had, you know, I shake it up a little bit. I don't like any other meat besides, you know, whatever their, you know, quote unquote beef is. Yeah. It's not all beef. No, I don't know what
whatever.
It is.
Whatever. It's some sort of meat based.
Squirrel, kangaroo, possum, whatever.
A possum pie, we love it.
Beautiful. That stuff. But, you know, the one thing that annoys me most about pies in general?
Spillage out the back on your hands.
That is pretty crap. By the way, on this topic, shout out to our mate Robin, who is the slowest pie eater in the entire world. We've still got footage of him, like, just nibbling it.
I remember in high school, like, we'd have like a 40-minute lunch, and he'd get his pie, and he'd only just finish it before the alarm would go off.
Every single bite he made, it looked like he was about to bite half the pie, and then would just scrape out one little piece of meat between his teeth.
Oh, unbelievable.
No, but the most annoying thing, especially when buying a meat pie from the football or, you know, a public area like a canteen at a soccer field or whatever, when you get your pie and they give it to you in that little paper sleeve, if you like, you put your sauce on it, right? This is the sauce that comes in, say, the Master Foods or the Fountain squeezy tube. And then they just proceed to jam it in the middle of it and then fill up essentially the inside with sauce. And then the nozzle is completely covered in sauce.
It's disgusting.
And then they put it down. And then that is the single most worst thing that's you just failing pie etiquette.
Yep.
And it's just, it kills me. It kills me, Josh, and it's the worst thing ever. And then the next time, if no one uses that sauce bottle for a good 15 minutes,
just
then it solidifies on top, and you have to be the dude that picks off the dry sauce. You understand my pain right now.
Disgusting.
You've experienced it. Everyone
has. It's disgusting. American listeners have got no idea what we're talking about. But anyway, I get it.
What is tomato sauce?
It's
ketchup.
Yeah, ketchup.
Ketchup.
All right, some initial thoughts on Super Bowl 51 before we let you go. So we haven't done any research or reading yet. Obviously, we'll get to that early next week.
What are you talking about? I've been studying it all week.
Patriots are 3-point favorites. By the way, Madden foretold that the Falcons would win the Super Bowl in their simulations before the playoffs started, which is kind of amazing. But there's a piece this week from Chris Wessling that pretty much says that Matt Ryan's season this year is very much like 2007 Tom Brady. So we've got a 2007 Tom Brady against a 39-year-old Tom Brady. Only one has Bill Belichick as their coach, though, so you've got to bear that in mind. Some other things here. Kyle Shanahan's faced Bill Belichick twice in his career as an offensive coordinator. He scored 34 points against them with Matt Schaub in 2009 and 27 points with Rex Grossman in 2011. Isn't that amazing?
Do you want me to poke holes in those stats? Or are we ready to move on?
I can imagine you saying, oh, but their defense wasn't as good then, or it was a meaningless match, but that's two below-average quarterbacks. He's now got the best possible quarterback in his system, in his scheme.
Maybe.
Is that what you're going to say? It's still kind of amazing.
I was going to say, it was their worst defense. One of them was, like, their worst defense. It was essentially, you know, it was, what was it, ranked 30th in DVOA?
The 09 one, but they'd only allowed 30 points to the Saints and the Colts who'd made the Super Bowl. All the rest, no other team scored more than 30 except for Matt Sharp with Kyle Shanahan. It's pretty amazing.
And then the other one was, that was a week 17 game, right? And then they had to bye the week after.
Yeah, they pretty much rested players, but still, it's Rex Grossman, but still, it's kind of amazing. But I feel like much will be made about Brady v. Ryan, but it'll likely come down to whether or not Belichick can stop this Falcons defense. That's the matchup that I'm looking forward to.
Offense.
Sorry, yeah, Falcons offense. Bill Belichick versus Falcons offense is the matchup that I'm really, really excited about.
I feel like Patriots always, you know, allow some gains to the running back, but if they can, you know, shut... It's different. It's definitely different because Patrick Chung, who is a really weird player, is a really weird overlooked player. It's always seen as Devin McCourty is the safety of, you know, the terrific safety on the New England Patriots. But everyone overlooks Chung. And Chung is like this hard-hitting, always knows where to be in this system. And mixed with Devin McCourty, these are players that, you know, are far better at and far better adept to hitting Julio and not just being pushed off like you saw against Green Bay. You see Julio just pushing them off. It's not going to be like that.
No.
Chung will just dive at his knees. It's not going to be a thing like that. Patriots defense knows how to tackle. So if they can, you know, if they throw a Malcolm Butler or Logan Ryan, who they both played well, they both played still very well against the Steelers. If they, you know, double team with a safety against Julio, I mean, I know Julio is still a beast, but if they can somehow shut him down, the game could be a real grind. It could end up really weird, especially because you know that the Atlanta Falcons pass rush is way better than what the Steelers had. So it's going to be, it could be a real grind, and no one's expecting it. So
I can't wait.
To be honest, I just can't wait. It's going to be crazy.
It's going to be crazy. I'm also going to look forward to Martellus Bennett during media day. Bennett brothers always provide some sort of entertainment, so that's something to look forward to. There's not too many Falcons with a huge amount of personality, but I feel like one of these rookies like Keanu Neal or Deion Jones could provide some entertainment for us. Apparently someone called Luke Bryan is singing the national anthem. I've never heard of that guy in my life.
Maybe he'll be in. I reckon he'll be the star performer of the Super Bowl next year.
I want the sax player as the Super Bowl from the Falcons game. That guy is amazing.
Who sung the national anthem last season?
Lady Gaga.
natural progression.
Oh, you heard it here. Luke Bryan. Right?
Boom.
Super Bowl 52 halftime performance. By the way, before there we let you go, the Puppy Bowl is on the day before. Are you on Team Ruff or Team Fluff?
What's the difference?
Literally two letters.
I'll go Fluff because it sounds funny.
All right, well, I'm on Team Ruff, so that worked out well. We'll have a little side wager and we'll add it to the Burger Bet board and we'll see what we can come
up with. Sorry. We're not adding that to the Burger Bet board just because you want to win some back. To be honest, the only thing I want to happen from the Super Bowl is a last-minute 99-yard touchdown from Chris Hogan to win. That would be...
either way, like a 99-yard touchdown from either side in the final seconds is a dream scenario given the blowouts we've had this season.
I know. To be honest, it's going to be close. It's going to be close. You can
hope so.
Because let's look at it two different ways. The Patriots have been there before. Obviously, they've been there 1,000 times, and you know they're the best ever football dynasty. You agree? They're just like they're the best dynasty the NFL's ever seen.
In the Super Bowl era, definitely. I feel like we can't really go too far back when we saw teams win a lot in a row, like different championships when it was like the AFC and then there was the, you know, all the different ones. But yeah, definitely in the past like 30 or 40 years, absolutely.
Yeah, and so it's like you could easily see them coming out, and I mean the Atlanta Falcons, their offense is great, but you can easily see them possibly being stifled, Patriots getting up early, but then you can always see Atlanta coming back into it because they've just got that offense. That they're just bound to score eventually. Like, they're not going to just all of a sudden drop off the planet. They've versed some good defenses and still put up some points, so you know they're going to be able to put points up against the Patriots, whose defense isn't as good as some of them played, despite, you know, there's going to be a very well executed game plan still for the defensive side of the Patriots. And then you've got the other hand, no matter how well this Atlanta Falcons offense plays, no matter how on fire, say, Freeman or Julio Jones gets, Patriots will always be in it. Like, they'll just never be out of it. And like, even two touchdowns down, you'll just be like, of course, it's still Belichick and Brady and McDaniels and Patricia. They're still going to...
Yep.
Find a way to keep them in it. So
what I do like is both
teams being a blowout otherwise.
No, and both teams literally have no fear because the Falcons are the underdogs. No one thought they were going to be here. You know, just making the Super Bowl is an accomplishment. So it doesn't really matter what happens because it's still just an amazing story and an amazing season for Matt Ryan, and he's proven that he is a top tier quarterback at least moving forward if he can keep up that play. But and the same with the Patriots, they've already proved everything. They've achieved everything the world can achieve. If they lose this game, no one's going to bat an eyelid or change their opinion on this team or whatever it is. So both teams can literally go in with no fear because the result's not going to change what people think about them. Whereas, you know, when sometimes there's a lot of pressure on, you know, when the Broncos played the Seahawks, it was this amazing offense and it was a lot of pressure on, you know, can this Broncos offense finish the job and all that sort of stuff. I feel like there's no real pressure on either of these teams because they're both, you know, I don't know. It just feels like they can both go in with no fear and just play like they've got no fear at all. No conservative play whatsoever.
I agree. Yep. I wholeheartedly agree.
Before we let you go, got to ask you about Hottest 100 because it's Australia Day.
Oh, I just went and saw this basement concert and there were only four people there, but they're starting to blow up now, so I'm really over it.
What's your
I'm starting to feel that it's always no one wants to vote for the favorite because they assume it's going to be the favorite now. And now it kind of gets skewed. By the way, that Adore song, please,
you know,
get out of here.
You know, like, that's going to win. You know that's going to win.
If that wins, I'll be salty. Like that song.
All right, so listeners,
more than off while
the person,
huh?
The person that puts my face on the salt shaker for the GIF, if Adore wins Triple J Hottest 100, can you please put Woot's face on the salt shaker? And we can be a matching pair. Would that be the worst one since
Flume will
Macklemore.
Win. Flume will win. Flume will win. I reckon Jungle is... I like Jungle. I reckon Jungle should win. Saying that, I'm a huge Flume fan. So I'm happy with either of them. Those would be my top three songs, so you're right.
I don't mind. I really want to see, you know, Kanye sneak into the 10. A little bit of Ultralight Beam. you know, just get it in there.
Yeah. I mean, could go either way.
What about my DMA's color?
My top ten has those three songs that we mentioned in it, and then probably no other song you know.
Okay, cool.
Besides maybe a Kanye song.
What about the DMA's like a version of Believe, of Sure? Solid.
I mean, see, like, that's where I kind of just feel like the Hottest 100 goes too hipster.
It's very narcissistic, like, too. The Triple J will vote their own song. Their own.
I'm not narcissistic whatsoever.
No, not you. I'm saying Triple J is.
This is the thing where I feel like I have no problem with them kind of kicking out the mainstream songs, like the really, really mainstream poppy stuff. Like, that's just not their style. That's fine. I'm completely fine with that. But when it comes to like versions and stuff like that, I just feel it's just crap. I just feel like people are going, oh yeah, I listen to Triple J. Like, it's like them fitting in, and that, that's, oh yeah, I'm one of those people that listens to the Hottest 100 all the time. And yeah, like, no matter what, I listen to Triple J. That's like the only station I'll listen to if I listen to anything. Like, I listen to podcasts, I listen to Spotify, and if I have to listen to the radio, I listen to Triple J. And I've never once voted for a cover on like a version, even though I've loved heaps of them. I won't do it because it's just...
Well, I voted for them because they dressed like they lived in Macquarie Fields, and I appreciate the ability to pull that off.
God damn. What about Bliss and Esso?
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Edited for offensive comments.
Jesus. Too soon, man. Too soon.
No,
all right.
Cut that.
I'm going to cut that out. All right, man. All so much for you only being available for 45 minutes. You rambled on about Tom Brady and meat pies and Triple J for about 45 minutes, and then we covered the rest in between. So I'll let you go. I'll finish the show, and we'll meet up next week for Lunar Bowl meetings and some podcasts, and then we're going to kick things off on our first ever Lunar Bowl appearance.
Lunar Bowl!
In 2 weeks.
Buy your tickets.
Yep.
By the way, Pagano, eh? Pagano lives on.
You can rub it in when we podcast next.
Guys, make that salty gif. You can throw Pagano in it if you like. Just put all the things that Y hates, all of them. Just put 1,000 Tom Brady heads, and then just put Ursay and Pagano. Just sprinkle them in.
We'll be back next week together.
All right, love you all.
If we don't break things off, because I feel like you're trying to really get under my skin today.
Nailed it.
Marking of a true podcast. All right, peace out, man.
Ciao.
All right, as Woot mentioned on his out there, the Colts have fired general manager Ryan Grigson. Grigson's status had been up in the air since the end of the season. The Colts are finally moving on after years of draft and free agency whiffs. Grigson's clashes with coach Chuck Pagano had also become a distraction over the last two seasons, so much so that they actually got a psychologist in to try and repair the relationship. Just imagine that, and marriage counselling of Pagano and Ryan Grigson together. President of Football Operations Jimmy Ray is a candidate to replace Grigson if they stay in-house, but they're also bringing in Chris Ballard from the Chiefs, Elliot Wolf from the Packers, George Patton from the Vikings, and Trent Kirchner and Scott Fitterer from the Seahawks for interviews for the GM job. All of those, I think, would be better selections than Jimmy Ray. I'd like to see a full clean-out of that front office. I would love to see Chris Ballard from the Chiefs come to the Colts, bring Dave Tube, the special teams coach of the Chiefs, as the head coach for the Colts, and just have a fresh new image from there. I wouldn't mind one of the Seahawks guys either, because they go heavy into the analytics in their draft, and they've proven that with a lot of hits over late round picks, Thomas Rawls, Frank Clark, you know, players like that that they've hit in the later rounds and have really worked out for them. CJ Prosas as well. So they've done a hell of a job there. Ryan Grigson, I'm glad to see you go, but I do want to see Chuck Pagano go as well. I think they need a full clean out there and a revamp, because they're wasting Andrew Luck's talent. So we'll wait and see what that happens. I think bringing in a new GM is going to be tough if the Colts want to keep Chuck Pagano. So we'll wait and see how that pans out. Something definitely to monitor over the next few days, and we'll talk about that when Josh and I podcast early next week, because we can't talk about the Super Bowl the entire show or you guys will get bored. Last little bit of news. Speaking at the Senior Bowl, the Redskins coach Jay Gruden said he fully expects impending free agent Kirk Cousins to re-sign with Washington. "We fully anticipate Kirk coming back," Gruden said. So all signs pointing to Kirk Cousins returning to Washington, D.C. If they don't, you got to keep an eye on Kyle Shanahan, the 49ers, scoping him out. Shanahan loves Kirk Cousins, so that's something to keep an eye on. Now it's time for our mailbag.
Goodbye.
All right, so mailbag questions to wrap up the show. I'll answer these as quick as possible, as the show went longer than we expected. This is from Tim Cummins at TimC0212. Is Joe Flacco elite? No. Moving on, Rich Eddie from 1973 asked, should will the Falcons give Freeney another year, and who are the options to replace Kyle Shanahan as offensive coordinator? So it's interesting. I don't think they'll bring Freeney back for another year. If they win the Super Bowl, I think Freeney will retire. But it'd be interesting to see if they do bring him back. He will be getting another year older, and it depends what they do in the draft and free agency. So it would, given the situation, that would depend. In regards to Shanahan as offensive coordinator, there's been some murmurs about Chip Kelly possibly coming in, which I think would be just a horrible no-no. I just think that's a bad decision. I think the natural progression is just to either give the offensive line coach Chris Morgan or Matt LaFleur, their quarterbacks coach, who have both worked under Kyle Shanahan now in this system for a couple of seasons, the reins, and let sort of LaFleur and Matt Ryan take charge of this offense. I feel like Ryan's now smart enough and mature enough to really co-author that offense with LaFleur and keep a lot of Kyle Shanahan's playbook and play calling and situations and all sorts of knowledge with him. So that's the route I would go. Murray Connellan, who makes the Hall of Fame first, Eli, Big Ben, or Rivers? I feel like it's whoever will retire first. I feel like all three will probably make the Hall of Fame. Funnily enough, I feel like Big Ben and Rivers probably have a better chance than Eli, despite Eli's rings, although the Hall of Fame will probably disagree. I feel like probably Eli, because I feel like he's on his last legs rather than Big Ben and Rivers, although Big Ben did talk retirement today. But I think Rivers will take a little while to get in, but I feel like Rivers will eventually get in. I feel like his career stacks up really well against a lot of quality quarterbacks. And the last question from Matthew Heasley, at Matthew Heasley, he said, it might be too early, but is there another plausible MVP if the Pats win other than Tom Brady? And look, I'd probably say no, given that he is the $1.83 favorite with William Hill. But I feel like if there's just no value in that. $1.83 for an MVP is just not good value. It's just not worth betting. So if you feel like the Pats will win, and we'll get to this, and you're right, it is a little bit early, but I feel like the value might be in one of their cornerbacks or Trey Flowers, who could sneakily get a few sacks. He might get a few snacks as well, but he'll also grab a few sacks. But I feel like Malcolm Butler or Logan Ryan. Logan Ryan's about $81. If he can contain Julio, maybe get a pick six or force a fumble or something, that could be some value for you at the MVP. But we'll get into that, as I said, throughout next week. We'll do a couple of preview shows, a prop bets pod, where we talk about some betting markets and whatnot, and just to make the game even more fun. And that wraps up our mailbag for today, and that wraps up the show. Please, as we said, Lunar Bowl. Just type in Lunar Bowl, Lunar Park. First result is www.lunarparkvenues.com/Lunar Bowl. You can buy tickets there. Follow all the prompts. You can also even buy tickets from www.whatsonsydney.com. In the sports section, Lunar Bowl is mentioned in there. So plenty of options for you to buy tickets. Optus perks as well. So please check that out. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at JYNFL. You can follow Woot on Twitter at Woot, etc. And the show at Woot and Y. And please give us a like on Facebook, The Woot and Y Show. And we can't wait to preview Super Bowl 51 next week.